So, Angaria and Hivrika is an interesting discussion. It's a little afield for our purposes because it's mostly about Tzchiras Metaltalin, and we don't want to get mired in Metaltalin-specific questions. We'll save some of that for next year. But it is important just in reconstructing the halacha's general theory of loss allocation. As you can tell from the Rishonim that we've seen, they're constantly appealing to these cases of Asocher Chamor Meis, Sfina Shetava. So some of the broader rules seem to apply equally to Tzchiras Polim and Tzchiras Metaltalin, and they're articulated in the Gemara in the context of Metaltalin. So one point out just before we get into the sugya, just note that the Shulchan Aruch and Siman Shin Lamed Vav does quote a din of Angaria with respect to Tzchiras Polim as well. Socher Sapol Venechas Bangaria Lavodas HaMelech Eino Yochel Lomra Hareini Lefanecha Elo Eino Nosein Lo Elek Fimasha Asa Imo. This is a striking rule because it seems to be at odds, actually, with the default rules when it comes to Tzchiras Metaltalin, but we'll talk about that soon. The Mishnah in Bav Metzia Ayin Ches Amud Aleph. So you see, guys, we made some headway already on Ayin Ches, and soon we'll be on Daf Pei. So very, very exciting. The Mishnah in Ayin Ches Amud Aleph says, Hasocher Asa Chamor Vehivrika. So you hire a donkey, you lease a donkey, and it gets cataracts. I think Hivrika is like kind of cataracts, right? Oshanasa Angaria, or it's requisitioned by the government. So Omer lo Hareshal Chalafanecha. So the owner, so the owner of the donkey can turn to the renter and say, look, tough luck, it's your donkey that was confiscated. You're the renter, the hefsid is yours to bear. By contrast, meso nishpra, if the animal dies or is fully disabled, then the owner has to replace it. Okay. Now the question is, on what grounds or what principles decide whether a requisitioned animal is the balabayas's loss to bear, meaning the owner's loss, he has to replace it for the renter, or whether it's the renter's loss to bear, that he's stuck not having a camel for a few days. You know, I lease a car from Nissan. Suppose the car gets confiscated by state of Pennsylvania for whatever reason. You know, they need it to do some farming down here. And do I have some sort of claim against Nissan that they have to give me a replacement vehicle? And so the Gemara here is suggesting that if it was seized by the government, they could say, Hareshal Chalafanecha, Nissan could turn to me and say, look, it's your car. Sorry, you're lost to bear. Don't bother us with your issues. So the question is, on what grounds can they say that to me? So what does Rashi say? Rashi 9 Chesam et al. If anybody want to read Rashi for us, volunteer. Volunteer to read Rashi. Let's volunteer someone.
I'm happy to read.
Go for it, Ben.
If you can hear me, I don't know if there's any feedback. But yeah, we can. Rashi or all of them?
Just the important Rashi. Like, what does Rashi say determines the principle of loss allocation? Just, you can see Hareshal Chalafanecha. And, yeah, Hareshal Chalafanecha.
Yeah.
Go for it.
Right. Talna Kimoshiki Samuya Vitele. Shab Mazalka Grum Kimon Mazli. Right, take it. So he says, like, you know what? It's still usable.
Right, the animal got some.
Take it in its blind state.
Exactly, the animal is, you know, it got cataracts, but it's your loss to bear. Sha'af mazolcha garam kimo mazali. Very interesting phrase. Sounds like Rashi's saying there's no way to say that one person is more responsible than the other, right? You know, I guess one way of reading this Rashi is, you know, both of our mazel cause this, or neither of our mazels cause this, or there's no principled way of deciding whose mazel causes this. And therefore, let the loss lie where it falls. That's how I read Rashi here.
Yeah.
Does that make sense, Ben?
By the way, that is not so far off from saying, like,
exactly. I think you're right. Meaning it's let's leave things where they fall. Yeah,
so there's like inertia, right? The world, you know, a basic principle of legal conservatism.
Exactly. If you read the in the chapter that I sent out, that very short chapter on contracts, so the author there, who you could tell he's a kind of has a wry sense of humor, he says something like an astute observer will notice that in all these cases, the court basically just, you know, stepped back and says, we're not going to meddle with this business, leave things as they are. Like, unless there's like a very good reason to reapportion the loss, just like leave things as they are. So that's the, he's like, there's no other, you know, overarching theme to these cases other than that. And Rashi's saying here, at least on one interpretation, is if there's reason to think that, you know, no one is particularly responsible, or ach mazolcha garam kimo mazali, so we're not going to reapportion. Harei shalcha lefanecha, leave things as they are. Same thing in the Angaria case, right? Sha'af mazolcha garam v'nafsid shinenu. That could be interpreted in a few ways. It's not clear if this is assuming that for some reason if this animal was like totally seized by the government, never to be returned, and therefore the balabais is losing the asset in its entirety, and the renter is losing the use of the asset. And in that sense, you know, by letting the loss lie where it falls, they're both incurring some sort of loss. But at least Rashi, the way I read Rashi is that if it's both of their mazel or neither of their mazel or no reason to try to blame one person over the other, you leave things as they are, which I think Cole is pointing out is like a reasonable principle of judicial conservatism. Good. Anybody have comments on that?
I have to leave for a Yom Yerushalayim thing.
What does that mean?
You want me to say it in Hebrew?
What kind of Yom Yerushalayim thing are you going to?
We're singing Yadid Nefesh, and then Rav Moshe is giving a sicha. I don't understand. Didn't you go here? Oh, did you? Are you one of these people? Did you go sit in your room and learn during the Yom Yerushalayim thing?
Cole, what?
I wasn't allowed to go to Chugim.
Cole, when you get up to Shemayim and they ask you Popalta Bukhachma, you'll say, yes, except for when I went to sing Yedid Nefesh for Yom Yerushalayim.
I think Rav Lichtenstein did. I even put on a white shirt.
I thought you always wear a white shirt.
Alright, Itamar, have a good one.
Alright. Bye, Cole.
Bye.
Unconscionable. Now, the interesting question here is, I want to point out, when we speak about loss allocation in the context of this sugya, so which loss are we apportioning? Is it whether the poel still has to pay, whether the renter still has to pay for an item that he can't use? Or is this about the owner's duty to provide a replacement? And we're trying to figure out whether the owner has that obligation or whether he's discharged from it. So there could be two different ways of thinking of loss allocation and the response of Harei Shalcha Lefanecha in this discussion. One is in terms of whether the poel, whether the renter has to pay for an item that he's not being used. And then when the owner says Harei Shalcha Lefanecha, the Gemara is saying, yes, he does have to pay. The other way of reading the sugya is that we're trying to figure that we take for granted that a poel doesn't have to pay for item he's not using. And the question is, does the renter have a Hofeldian claim right against the balabais to be provided with a replacement item? And with respect to that, the balabais can answer, Harei Shalcha Lefanecha, look, dude, the donkey was taken away under your watch. I don't have any obligation to replace it. So we'll see those two ways of reading the Gemara in a second. I think either way you read the Gemara, the principle of loss allocation will still be important, right? You need a principle of loss allocation for either of those questions, though you might distinguish between principles that are relevant for determining whether someone has to pay without benefiting from an item, and principles of loss allocation for whether the owner has a duty of replacement. But let's take Yair's question before we go on. Yair?
Yeah, it's a very local question. Rashi's explanation about mazel doesn't adequately explain the difference between you know, the Angaria case versus the Maita Nishpura case, right? Unless I'm missing something essential in Rashi.
Meaning, why is there an obligation to provide a placement in Meso Nishpura?
Right. Cold legal conservatism seems to suggest that in both cases should be treated equally.
Yeah.
If the goal is we're just not going to get involved when no one's at fault.
Right, right. It's interesting. Unless Rashi's thinking that in the Meso Nishpura case, it's clear that it's the mazel of the Balabais that's goreim, because it's not just the use.
No.
What's that?
I mean, that doesn't change the level of mazel.
Yeah, it's a good point. It's a good point. So you're both saying, well,
it seems like the mazel is more just like maybe.
Mm-hmm. I agree, but you're both saying that it's hard to know on Rashi's read why Meso Nishpura Shemafsid Kol Scharo suddenly changes the mazel question. Right, Yair, that's the point? And Ben, that's what you're agreeing to?
Well, maybe it doesn't change the mazel question. Maybe mazel is really not that big a deal. Meaning mazel is just sort of a precondition for this conversation to even take place, is that it wasn't one person's fault more than the other.
Yeah,
the distinction is not based in the level of mazel.
It's an interesting idea. I don't know if that holds up.
The distinction, meaning you underlined... Yeah.
I underline the mazel stuff.
Right, so maybe you should be underlining the Tarach of Asher Tabit Rahim.
Right.
Right. Talmud Kamoshihi.
So maybe you're saying there are two considerations in Rashi. First is equal mazel contribution. And secondly, are you still getting some use out of it? And then what changes in the Mesa case is the fact that you're not getting any benefit or something like that. The degree of the loss. Is that your point, Ben?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a very valid reading.
Yeah.
You might be right. If that's true, then we could just answer Yair's question by saying, Yair, what's different about the Meso Nishpura case is some further consideration. But for now, I think we could suffice with observing that the equal contribution of mazel is at least partially relevant to determining loss allocation. So Yair, it's an important qualification then to the analysis of Shitas Rashi. So on the question of which Hofeldian duty is at issue here, the duty of the owner to replace the item or the duty of the renter to pay without having an item to use. So you could just see that the Rashba raises this point, citing the Ravid. He says, Omar lo harisha chalafanecha, pirsha harayvid b'chamor stam. We don't have to worry about that so much. The kasav huzal, nearly, dil'inyan tviyas hasocher al hamaskir bilvad ka'amar. Right? The defense of harisha chalafanecha is only with respect to the claim that the renter is making against the owner. Shi'afal pi shehizki lo chamor stam, einu yochal l'tvoa shi'yamid lo chamor acher, shehu omar lo chamori kayyam. Right, so the Ravid's position, as cited in the Rashba, is that of course the socher has no duty to pay for an item he can't use when it's requisitioned by the government. The only question is whether the balabayas, the owner, has a duty to replace. Now, he does say that this is tentative. Let's see. Or here's another important point. He says, Eich yitva mimenu schar v'hu einu yachol lehishtamesh ba. Right, of course, how could the renter have a duty to pay if he doesn't have an item to use? Now, I just want to point out, that's not an obvious objection at all. You might say, like we saw, I believe it was in the Rashba, in the Chivas Rashba. Once you rent something, it's like mechira gemura, and therefore you're stuck with the item. It's not clear why the Ravid could be so adamant that, of course, paying for the item is conditioned on you receiving some benefit from it.
And then he here also makes that suggestion, right?
Yeah, and the next thing.
Yeah.
Then he says, V'afal pi shehoye be'efshar lomar, sheyocho lomar lo balachamor, Mimcha likhuha, umazol chagaram. Right? So the Rashba does say, well, I actually could entertain the idea that you would have to pay even though you're not getting use of the item, because the Baal HaChamor might be able to argue to the socher mazol chagaram, mimcha lekachu, they took it from you, and therefore it should be entirely your loss. But then he kind of just walks away from that and says, mikol makom hashekasav arav nir li'ikar. And he thinks that he has a raya, I think, from what Yair was pointing to in Meso Nishba, Dimken, afilu Meso Amayis Chayav Lahami Lochamor, Lemele Mazal Chagaram. Right, if you could really point fingers about Mazal Chagaram, then the owner should be able to make a similar claim in the case of Meso Nishba. So at least the Rashba seems to have two deos about whether this sugya is about payment for an item, loss allocation, and having to pay for an item you're not getting benefit from, or the owner's duty to replace the item that was seized. I just want to point out that even though the Rashba sides with the Ravid and says that the sugya is really about the duty to replace, the owner's duty to replace the item, the Shulchan Aruch seems to read the sugya kipshuto. Shulchan Aruch in Simen Shin Yud Sif Aleph says, Asocher es behema v'cholsa v'adayin roi lemlacha, onishtates onilkechol avodas ha-melech, af al pisha ein sofa lachzor, im lokcha derech halicha, hare ha-maskir omar lesocher hare shalchal afanecha, v'nothen lo schar mishalem. So the last line here suggests that this discussion is really about payment. Right, the maskir can say to the socher, "Reisha chalafanecha, v'nosein lo schar mishalem," and the renter has to pay the full schar, even though he's not being able to use the item. So that suggests that the sugya is about loss allocation and payment for use of the item that was seized. You guys agree with that reading of the Shulchan Aruch?
Just
now
for me, so I missed that last.
What's that?
Can I ask a question on the Rashba?
Yeah, are you agree with reading the Shulchan Aruch?
Yeah, I think you're right about the Shulchan Aruch.
Okay.
Can I just... The last line, the notate law, who's giving to whom?
The renter is paying the Baal HaBayis. Right? The maskir, owner, could say to the renter, Harei shel chalafanecha, right? Look, you still have the animal. It was taken from you. V'nosen lo schar mishalem, and therefore the renter's got to pay the full schar. Right, which sounds like against the Ravid's reading of the sugya. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, Yair, you had a quick question?
Yeah, within the Rashba, it's a clarification question. Within the Rashba, if we end up falling on the side of the maskir having to provide an alternative animal, it would then fall back on the socher to pay the full value of the animal.
Exactly.
I rent a chamor, it's gone, you give me another chamor, great, I'll pay you normally, right?
Okay, correct. Perfect. Correct. Meaning... he'd have to pay, assuming that the Baal HaBayis replaces it, at the Rashba's.
Right, meaning the point of the Rashba is we're not going to entertain the possibility of paying fully without getting the full value.
Exactly.
If you get the full value, you'll pay normal.
The Rashba himself then says, oh, you could make that argument under the Mazal Ogaram. Right. Zolt.
It's worth noting, I think, that even the Ravid's whole argument is based on assumption that this case is the case of Chamor Stam. It could be that the Shulchan Aruch is in the case of Chamor Zeh, in which case even the Ravid would agree.
Could be. Yeah, it's an interesting suggestion. Yeah, that is very possible. In which case, they're not disagreeing. I have to look a little deeper here into the poskim in Simen Shin Yud, see what they say about this comment. Okay, so let's move to the main course for today. So the Gemara raises two discussions. I think Mar raises two distinctions within the sugya of Angaria. So the first is Rav's distinction of an Angaria Choseres and an Angaria She'eno Choseres. Bipashtus, what that means is that the owner has the upper hand. He could say Haresha Chalafanecha when the donkey is going to be returned within the time frame of the Schirus. Right, so the renter will be getting some benefit from the object. So when it's going to be returned within the time frame of the schirus, then it's the socher's loss to bear. But if it's going to be requisitioned forever and is never going to be given back, then it becomes the Baal Bayis's loss to bear. Okay, and by loss to bear here, I think it just means, again, on the Shulchan Aruch's reading, that he has to pay even though he's not benefiting. And on the Ravid's reading, it means that the owner doesn't have a duty to replace it. Okay. So the first important shita here, and this is really what I want to discuss, about loss principles of loss allocation based on from which party is the ones stemming, is the Ritva's comment here in Ayin Chesem and Beis. Gabe, you want to take us away with the Ritva? Yeah. So what's the distinction?
That depending on the form of the angaria, we can place the onus on different parties.
Yeah. Based off this idea of mazalo gorim, right? Who is mazal cause this? So first of all, Gabe, do you want to tell us a little bit about how you understand mazalo gorim?
Can't say I have like a formulated understanding of mazalo gorim, but I think. I wouldn't call it metaphysical, but I think what we try and parse out is perhaps, maybe at least the way the Ritva is thinking about it is would this onus have occurred to the Baal Bayit if the Masker hadn't been involved? Or like, to what extent is this something which would plague the Baal Bayit independent of the Masker, of the Sofer, sorry.
Yeah, I think you're right that it's an open question whether the Rishonim here are thinking metaphysically, you know, like whose star in the Mazel constellation, right, caused the loss to happen. It's possible that some Rishonim are thinking in those terms. But I think we should, I don't think we have reason for reading the stars in this Sugya if we don't have to. So yes, I think you're right. They're trying to figure out, like, you know, where to allocate the loss, right? Based off, like, some way of divining in whose reshus, in whose kind of normative possession did the ones fall, right? And so how does the Ritva do that, Gabe?
So it looks like the question of frequency, right? Like, would this continue to occur whether or not the Sofer was there beyond the scope of the Sofer's contract? And if it would, then it seems like it's more sort of, we could link it more closely to the owner of the Chamor than to the Sofer.
Yeah. So the idea seems to be that if the loss, right, so the duration of the requisition is fully contained within the scope of the lease, then we can say that it's the renter's loss to bear, right? So if there's some gzeira about the government seizing cars that is fully contained within the time frame of my lease, then we'll say that it's me, the leaseholder's, me, the renter's loss to bear. But if for some reason the gzeira or the requisition extends beyond the scope of the lease, then we can say mazalo shel maskir hu. Right, then we can view the onus as locking into the possession of the owner, and it becomes the owner's loss to bear. Kiven dechein mechzim mazalo shel socher garam to hamaskir lo mafsid midi. Right, the fact that it's wholly contained within the time frame of the lease means that the onus was like directed, it was targeted at the renter. But if it extends outside of the time frame of the lease, then we could say mazalo shel maskir hu. It's interesting.
The Ritva of the word mechze is a very non-committal word.
Yeah, right. Mechze, right? Does he mean like we see or looks as though, right? Yeah.
We're allocating one space out of some kind of perception that we don't actually believe links to anything more substantial than that. But
yeah. I like that observation. Right. And you'll see similar formulations that we should be sensitive to in the other Rishonim. Okay, so does anybody have comments on this Ritva? So it's one principle of loss allocation based off mazalo shel socher, mazalo shel maskir. He decides whose mazal is gorim based on whether it's fully contained, whether the onus is fully contained within the scope of the lease. One question I have here is that why is it the case? I don't understand why it's the case that if it extends beyond the lease, it's purely the hefsid of the maskir. But you might think it should be like both of their hefsid, right? Because it's partially within the lease, partially without of the lease. But for some reason, the Ritva goes in that direction. It seems a little arbitrary to me. Anybody have thoughts on why that would be the case?
I was talking with Yair about this morning, Seder. It seems like he views whatever mazala is, it seems like it's a binary. Like it's
either or.
Yeah, that it can't, there's no idea of like it's both of them, which is surprising. Like, yeah. Again, whatever mazal here is talking about.
Right, right. I agree. It's a little puzzling why it's set up this way. I guess we have to do more astrology. Right. Yoni has been working on his astrology, so Yoni's going to weigh in. Yoni?
I mean, like, without going into too much of, like, theology here, can't you just argue that if it's directly affecting both parties, right, if it's extending beyond the actual sphere, then it's clear that it has to do not with this particular sphere, but it affects the animal in general, which is owned by, you know, Maskir. But if it's limited to specifically the socher, so then it appears to be a problem that only relates to the socher. It's his problem.
Yeah, good. This is something that the Nesivis that I added at the 11th hour is trying to say, right? And this is the Nesivis Lashitaso that we saw in the beginning of the Chabura today. He's always trying to divine, like, did the onus hit the owner's asset or the poel's use, right? Or the renter's use. And that's how we're going to determine mazal ogaram. So it could be the Ritva is getting at that kind of an idea also. So if it hits the asset outside of the lease term, then the onus is targeting the asset. If it's fully contained within the lease term, then it's targeting the use, right? Yeah. I'll actually send out this interesting article, something of a side interest of mine by Tony Honore. Yeah, Tony Honor. I actually have his book right here. I'll show you his book. It's pulled out of storage, you could see. He actually just died this year. But very, very influential legal philosopher at Oxford. And he wrote this really important paper called The Incidence of Ownership. If you ever heard of, like, the bundle of, like, ownership, property, just like a bundle of rights, there are different incidents of ownership. You know, you have a use right, you have a right to the income of the thing, you have a right to exclude others from it, you have a right to transfer it. There are all these different incidents that are separable when it comes to property. So, like, when you rent something, it's a kind of property right, but that's limited to use, right? And so I guess they're thinking... The Rishonim here are thinking in terms of you could locate the onus based off like whether it affects the incidents primarily held by the renter or whether it affects the incidents of ownership that primarily are held by the owner, right? I think that's a nice way of putting it. I'll send out that article for us to read. Okay, Good, that's with respect to Rav's position about Angaria Chozeres and Angaria Sheino Chozeres. The Rishonim also use this analysis of Mazel with respect to Shmuel's distinction of Derech Halicha and Shelo B'Derech Halicha. So the Gemara, Shmuel says basically that if the asset was seized B'Derech Halicha, make sure I get this right, then it becomes the hefsid of the socher. And if it's shelo b'derech halicha, then it's the hefsid of the owner. So, yes. So why should that be? What's the distinction between Derech Halicha and Shelo B'Derech Halicha? So here you get a range of views in the Rishonim that are very illuminating. So Rabbeinu Chananel has, so let me just point out, Rashi here again has this formulation of Hilkach Omer Lo Hoil V'Af Mazocha Goreim, right? Since your Mazel also caused it, that's why you could say Harisho Chalafanecha. So Rashi's Lashitaso, that we're going to let the loss lie where it falls when there's this contribution of both mazalos, or there's no way of deciding whose mazal. Tosus' sheet is much more interesting. Tosus 9 Chesem and Beis. What does Tosus say? What's Tosus' position? Anybody get a chance to see it before? Let's see. Yeah,
yeah. So Tosus suggests that...
Citing Rabbeinu Chananel, right?
Correct. That Derech Halicha here means... you took it out of your house and you know, left it on the road, and then the wandering, you know, army came and seized it. And there he invokes the notion of mazal garam, that your actions are what caused it to be taken. If you hadn't done those actions, it wouldn't have been taken.
Yeah. As opposed to...
it means you left it in your garage.
Yes.
Nothing was going to happen to it.
Okay, good. Exactly. So Tosos thinks that this is important for determining whose mazal is goreim. As Yair said... if they took it shebederech halicha, that means that you were using the donkey on the road, and the government's agents were, you know, I guess they had these road stops and they were pulling stuff off the roads. So here the owner can turn to the renter and say that your mazel was goreim, the renter's mazel was goreim, because by this counterfactual argument, ilu haisa babayis lo haisa niteles, right? And Tosos thinks that actually is muchach demazala didei goreim, because then it's super clear that the mazel of the renter caused the loss, right? Based off this counterfactual analysis, that had the renter not been using it at this moment, at this place, then the item would not have been seized. Okay, so this is this peculiar counterfactual analysis that determines whose mazel is goreim. And notice the, you know, to take Gabe's observation about the more cautious language of the Ritva, Tosos thinks that we can say it's muchach, right? It's like apparent that the mazel of the renter caused the loss, as opposed to the case of Mesa, where the animal just dies, where it's a little more ambiguous, okay? And the im shelo b'derech halicha sanitla, shtahinu shemechapsin gam bebatim, she'az lo mazalo shel socher gorim, chayv lahamid lo chamor acher, lasos malachta. If the government's going house to house, and it sounds like counterfactually, even had this asset been in the maskier's house, the item would have been seized, then we don't assign the blame to the socher, and we say that the item has to be replaced. So, other than the interesting point of the counterfactual analysis determining whose mazel is goreim, what else can we take away from this Tosos, Anayin Ches?
I mean, I can read what you wrote at the bottom.
That's good. You don't have to read it. You could just summarize it.
The Tosfot's argument is to assume that it's always the maskier's liability unless there's something explicitly that the socher is the mazel goreim.
That's right. I think Tosos, so you do agree with that analysis?
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I think that's what he's driving at.
Yeah, I think one important takeaway from this Tosfos is that by default, this is always going to be the maskier's loss. Unless there's some particular argument to reassign it to the socher. And that specific argument is mazal chagoreim in virtue of the fact that you took the animal out and the animal was seized because of where you were using it. I think that's also evident from Tosos' point of lo dami lemesa. Tosos seems to say that in the case of mesa, the reason why the balabayas has to replace the animal, or the reason why the poel doesn't have to pay, is because there's an absence of muchach milsa of Muchach de Mazal Adide Garam. Right? So by default, the case of Mesa, Balabais has to replace the animal. Same thing in the case of Angaria, by default, the Balabais has to replace it. Unless he has some specific argument, de Matzi Yamarle Mazalcha Garam, Shilo Haisa Abais, Lo Haisa Nitalas. I want to make another observation here, unless somebody else wants to make the observation for me. This pertains to Gabe's, related to Gabe's analysis, but not about the certainty of the claim, but a different, I would say, modal qualifier in how Tosvos uses the idea of Mazal Chagaram. What do you think is striking? Comes in this this statement.
Yeah, so mazafagaram is more a function of the taina that each party can make towards the other one.
Yeah, exactly.
Not some objective metaphysical fact.
Exactly. Tosas phrased it in terms of dematzi amar le mazal chagoram, right? It's this kind of legal argument that the owner has, not some true metaphysical statement about the ultimate cause of the Nezek. So I think that's a crucial issue in just in understanding what the Rishonim mean when they talk about Mazal Chagorim. Are they thinking of it in terms of factual causation or in terms of legal claims and arguments that the litigants are making? Dematzi Amarle Mazal Chagorim. And it's the potency of that claim which shifts the allocation of the loss. Yeah, Yoni?
Now, how do you read then the rest of the Tosfot where he talks about Mazal Chagorim outside of the context explicitly of Taina?
I mean, because then Demuchach de Mazal Dide Garam?
Yeah, and the next line also, Shemuchach and Gavabachim Sha'av Lo Mazal Shoftel Chagorim. It sounds like we're objectively qualifying whether or not Mazal Chagorim or not.
Yeah.
And the Taina is just about, you know, certifying whether or not, if making that theological point or making that.
Yeah.
Whatever Mazal Chagorim is, you're making that claim, but it's not that, it's all about claims.
Right, right. So I would just say two things easily. One of them is not very exciting, but, you know, we could always chalk this up to the editors of Tosvos. So I guess, you know, we'd have to look for the original Tosvos Shants and see if maybe there was a more precise formulation there. So
I know you're desperate when you go for the academic route.
Right, exactly. That's one possibility. The second possibility is distinguishing in terms of direction. So in terms of the balabayit, in terms of the owner's claim against the renter, it's always framed in the more cautious legal argument of matzi amarle. Right? So what makes the balabayit's claim valid is that the owner's claim valid is that it's matzi amarle mazal chagaram. But by default, right, we're going to assume, by default, it's Mazal de Balabais. And the only time he wins, so by default, it's factually Mazal de Balabais. The only time he wins is when he has this Matzi Amarle claim that he's able to launch. But we never have this kind of factual certainty with respect to the Mazal of the Socher being Gorim. Does that make sense?
I don't really get what appeals that, like, that line of argumentation, because it sounds like either way you're still claiming that on one direction there is a theological argument. So, like, why, like, what's motivating you to say
that?
But the one direction doesn't have it.
Yeah. Let me think about it a little more. All right. But at least it fits in the language of Tosos to distinguish along those lines. Right? You're asking what's the underlying reason. What's the persuasive rationale?
Yeah, I'm not sure, therefore, it makes it more theological meaning.
Right. Right, right.
But why can't, I mean, this is what you're saying, but why can't you just say that it's Matzi Amarle, meaning the facts are unclear, and therefore... All that the maskir has to argue is that the facts are unclear as to why the other slice.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
No, there is the higher burden of proof.
Right, that's what I'm saying. But that is what I'm saying, right?
Okay, fine. Yeah, no,
Right. Okay. I mean, it sounds, but Yoni's saying the payoff here isn't so high because, in terms of just trying to understand what they mean by mazal chagaram, Tosfos seems comfortable saying that there is some factual, there is some fact of the matter with respect to the mazal of the Baal Bayis being gorim in lots of cases. Right. So we don't, it's not like the Matzi Amarle shifts the nature of what mazal chagaram is doing in the sugya. That's Yoni's point. But I think Yakir's right that at least we have the substantive payoff in reading Tosvos is that it means that the burden of proof for the Baal Bayis is much weaker. Right, Yakir?
Yeah.
Good. Yeah. Look, Tosfos Rush has another formulation, also cites Rabbeinu Chananel, and he says, if it was b'derech halicha, omer lo harishu chalafanecha, shemazolcha goram, shepaga becha, sheilu haisa b'bayis lo haisa nitelas, that's like our Tosos, delo damya lemesa, demucha milsa demazol didei garam, okay, shekama ovrei drachim ovrim vein pogim behem avdei amelech, uvemazol haruchev talya milsa. So I guess just in terms of the certainty or the factual claim of Mazel Gorim, it's not clear to me if Tosa Rush is siding with Tosos of Matzi Amarle. He does say Omer Lo Harishu Chalafanecha. Why? Shemazol Chagaram. Is this all just part of the Taina of Matzi Amarle? Or is he saying that it in fact depends on Mazel Harochev, in virtue of the counterfactual analysis of Kamar Ove Drachim Ovrim Vein Pogin Behem Avdei Amelech? But then in the last line, he says, Nimsa in the case of where they're machaps and bibatim, and we say it's the mazal of Baal Bayis, Nimsa demazalo shabal habehema garam, ve'ein litlos bimazal harochiv, shaharei af bivayis hayilo kanoso kivin shetzvichin lebehemos. So when we say ein litlos, does he mean that we can't, assign the mazal to the mazal of the rochiv? Or does he mean that, you know, we can't make a tliya, meaning we can't, you know, make some assumption? Does he mean we can't make a factual assumption, or does he mean we can't make a legal argument? I don't know if the Tosfos Rush's language takes a clear stand one way or the other. Anybody have thoughts on it? Tosfos Rush's language? Or it's neutral? Anyone? Okay, were you saying something to us, or?
Nope.
Okay. No one has thought. I'm not 100% sure in this Tosfos Rush which way he's going. But more or less, he's in Tosfos' camp. Okay, I'm just going to take 5 more minutes to go through these other shitas, and then we'll call it a day. The Shita Kubetzes on Ayin Chasim and Beis cites the Talmud Rabbeinu Peretz. He distinguishes along the following lines. He says, derech halicha means that it was seized when the socher, after the socher took the animal out of the maskir's house. So it means the government requisitioned my Nissan after I drove it out of the Nissan dealer. De'az yachal lomar lo mazol chagaram. Once I drive the car out of the Nissan dealer's lot, Nissan could say, look, the car was in your possession. It's your loss to bear. V'im lav, but if it's shelo b'derech halicha, pirish im natla b'beiso shel maskir chayv l'hamid lo chamor. But if it was after I signed the lease agreement, but before I drove the car out of the dealer, then it's Nissan's loss to bear, and they're obligated to supply me with a replacement. Okay? So what do you take away from this Talmud Rabbeinu Peretz? Notice there's no discussion of, he does say mazal, he does say yachal lomar. Does yachal lomar lo mazal chagaram? Once I drive the car out of Nissan's lot, so they could say yachal lomar lo mazal chagaram. They have this like claim that they can make it's my mazal. But what do you take to be, in terms of the default rules? I know I wrote it over there, but how does this relate to Tosis's default rules? Yakir? Ben? Ben?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we hear you.
It seems like the default is that Soaker is liable.
Yeah, it's the exact opposite of Tosos, right? He's saying the default is the Socher is liable unless the onus happened before the car was in his Rishus. But the moment the thing is in the Rishus of the Socher, then Haresha Chalafanecha, Mazolcha Garam. This, I think, is a very strong statement about the Socher's ownership over the Davar Haniskar, over the Chefetz, which he gets. The exact opposite of Tosos, B'Shem Rabbeinu Chananel. Tosos B'Shem Rabbeinu Chananel thought by default the loss of the object will accrue to the Baal HaBayis. It's Mazal Lo Garam in a Schiras relationship. Talmud Rabbeinu Peretz goes the exact opposite way and says by default the loss gets assigned to the Socher unless there's some special reason, unless it's, you know, the object was never yet in his Rishos. Okay. I think that
this is what you're saying, like a quasi property right.
Say that again, Ben.
Sorry, bad service here. Does this sort of imply when you're that philosopher who was saying you might have a quasi property right through renting?
Oh yeah, the honorary thing. Well, see, honorary just says that there are different incidents of ownership that get divvied up. It's a further question as to who is considered to be like the owner, right? Based off like who has like the right amount of incidents or something, or more incidents or more important incidents of ownership. But yeah, I think this would be right. This would be in line with the idea that the Socher at least has like the incident of loss, right? He's enough. He's really the owner with respect to the fact that he's stuck with whatever losses happen while it's in during the Schiras.
Right.
Which is the exact opposite from Tosos, who seems to be saying that by default, the loss is the maskir's to be or bear, unless the maskir has some specific argument that, oh, you took the animal out and the animal was seized because of where and when you were using it. Yeah. Yair has a hand, so let's go, Yair.
Yeah, I actually, I just want to, I guess get greater clarity when we're talking about the word default. If you mean default as in, like, most cases will follow a certain rule as opposed to another rule, then I think your formulation is correct. If it's about, like, the law in the absence of external factors, I actually think that you're not correct. It seems like both of them agree that in the absence of Mazel claims, the Mosker is going to be liable. And they just disagree about how expansive or not expansive a Mazel claim actually is.
Well, I don't know if those things are separate. I guess it depends how we understand what a mazel claim is doing. See, if you think of a mazel claim, in Tosos, I think I like your point. You're saying structurally they're the same in that it takes a mazel claim to shift the burden to the socher, right, Yair?
Yeah.
Okay. But I disagree with your analysis because I think the mazel claim is doing different things for Tosos than it is for Rabbeinu Peretz. In Tosos, the mazel claim is shifting the loss allocation, right? It's doing substantive work. I think in Rabbeinu Peretz, the mazel claim is just reflecting where the normative incident of ownership really lies. So it's not doing any substantive work in shifting the loss allocation. It's just reflecting who the true owner is. So Rabbeinu Peretz is saying that once you drive the car out of the lot, it's your loss to bear. It's mazal chagaram because you're the owner. Yeah. That's how I understand Rabbeinu Peretz.
Kind of like a Kenyan gzela that like makes like it creates a liability.
What's creating a liability?
Meaning that he's not really the owner. That the Socher is not really the owner, but in this dimension of quote unquote ownership is a way to give him liability, and therefore he becomes responsible in case of onus. But he's not actually the owner.
No, more than that. That's kind of that's the point about the honorary piece, is that you know, who the owner is, the owner is really a meaningless term. What we mean by ownership is how the different incidents of ownership are assigned. And, you know, a leaseholder might, for all and purposes, for all intents and purposes of loss allocation, be the owner, right, with respect to assigning loss. He has the use right, he has the exclusion right, he has basically every right during the time frame of the lease, with respect to like a few minor things, right? If you think deeply about it, you know, what's the difference between leasing an item and owning a house with strict zoning laws? Right? They're kind of similar things. That's the idea. So yeah, so I think you could read a bit of parts as saying that the socher really is the owner. And mazalcha goram just reflects the normative incidence of ownership. It's not doing fundamental reallocations of liability. Here, does that answer your question?
Yeah, I think that's a plausible reading of Talmud Rabbeinu there.
Okay, good. Good. Okay, let's maybe just, let's mention that we'll talk, I'll 2 minutes, mention the Ravid and the Nesivis, and we'll all be free to enjoy the good weather. Or Donnie's already enjoying the good weather, so we could go on for longer. Donnie, you have to stay on for longer. No, I'm kidding. Okay, so the Shidduk Habetzes Ayin Chesam Beis quotes the Ravid as distinguishing Derech Halicha and
Shul.
Oh, wow, Ben, that looks awful.
Sorry.
Where are you driving, Ben?
I'm driving to Teaneck for the weekend.
Oh, wow, you're driving back from... back from Charleston?
Yeah. I needed to move some stuff out of my apartments and stuff. The lease was ending and all that, so.
Wow.
So I needed to come back for a little.
That's great. How's the drive going?
It's okay. I'll miss the Dolphins. The drive's good. Rainy.
Where are you up to? We know you're in the South because you passed a Confederate flag.
Exactly. So I'm in North Carolina now.
North Carolina. All right, nice. It's great. So the Ravid here says, "In bederech halicha lefi tumam paguba v'natluha, shelo bederech halicha sashal you omdim lo bimarav mifnei shayim mavriach mehen amas hazeh v'irvulo v'lakhu." So the Ravid reads the sugya a little differently. He says that if this was a random incident that the Avde HaMelech seized randomly Ben's car that just so happened to be driving on I-95 through North Carolina, suppose Ben is leasing the car, then it becomes the renter's loss to bear. Okay, so by default, it's Pseida de Socher. An arbitrary seizure is the socher's loss to bear. The only time the loss gets shifted to the owner is if they seize the asset because the owner had been evading taxes and the government was looking to take back assets from him. So it's generally going to be the pseida de socher of the renter, unless there's some specific reason, person-specific reason for shifting it to the maskir, such as the thing was seized because the maskir was not paying his dues, not paying his taxes properly, and that's why they seized the asset. V'inyan zeh v'adai mekach tosu, sheha yisa yodea shinevesh es beinayen, u'ma'aymanoscha v'sacharta osali, u'chemish lo nasan l'chamar metchilohu. The socher basically is the kind of mekach tos. I wouldn't have leased the animal if I knew that the government was going to take it away from you. All right. Does everybody see the Ravid? I think the Ravid is in this Rabbeinu Peretz camp, who thinks that by default, the socher is really the owner. The socher has to bear all the losses, unless there's some specific reason for shifting it to the balabayis, to the owner, through a claim of this kind of mekach tos, that it was seized because of your tax avoidance. Does that make sense to everyone? Good. Okay. The Nesivis, this is the last source we'll discuss, in Simon Shin Yud, Sif Katan Beis, discusses the distinction between Derech Halicha Shelo B'Derech Halicha. And basically he defines the following rule. He says, if the animal was taken from the socher and it deprived him of his ability to do the malacha, right? Takva me'asocher b'derech hilucha lasos malacha. V'lo gazal guf ha-behema. It wasn't like the guf ha-behema was seized. So it's not the incident, let's say, of title or ownership that was taken away. Rather, it was like it was the incident of certain use rights that was seized by the Angaria. Okay? Then, Yachol Gamkein L'mazol HaGarem. Avalim Nigzal Guf HaBehema, Dinasa HaOnes Gam B'Guf HaBehema HaShayach L'maskir, Hare Roen Din Mazol HaMaskir Garam, V'Eino Yachol Lomar L'socher Mazol HaGarem. So, he's thinking that if the Ones hits the use rights, then we will say that it's the onus of the socher. Because when you rent an object, primarily, your incident of ownership, your property right, inheres in your ability to use it. So if the onus hits the use ability, then it becomes pseida de socher. If, however, the onus hits the title incident, the guf ha-behema, which is shayach lemaskir, then we know that it's the mazel of the balabayis, which is goreim, the mazel of the owner, and it becomes his loss to bear. So here's another formulation. He says, kol she'ha'ones nase beguf ha-behema mazel ha-maskir garam, aval im lo ba'ha'ones rak bimleches ha-socher, chayav litin lo scharo mishalem de mazel le'didei garam. So I think the Nesivus is the one who comes closest to this honore kind of analysis, where there are different incidents. There's a use incident and this kind of ownership incident, and we have to see where the onus hits to determine who has to bear the loss. The one thing I would say is I think the Nesivus' formulation is a little imprecise, that maybe guf ha-behema is not the best way to refer to the ownership incident, to the title incident, that's the balabiases, because there's a sense in which the worker, the socher, has a right to use the guf ha-behema as well. So I think he's really just trying to distinguish between a use right and like the actual title to the animal, which he just breaks down in terms of malacha versus guf ha-behema. Okay, so this is the overview of the sugya of Angaria. Angaria takes an important stand on whether it's pseida de socher or pseida de maskir. You see the Rishonim fall in different camps based off what's the default in the relationship. You see that mazolo goreim is, at least for some Rishonim, a way of shifting the burden. Although, as I pointed out in my discussion with Yair, that's not necessarily true in all the cases. Sometimes mazolo goreim is just reflective of where the loss hits. And I think the Nesivus offers us like an interesting way of distinguishing between these different incidents of property rights. Okay, so let's stop here and let's pick up next week with both the sugya of Asocher Asachamor Mesa Bechatzi Aderech and the really important, you don't get too bogged down in Chamor Zen and Chamor Stal, I'll just mention it, and the really important sugya of Asocher Asvina Vitalva Bechatzi Aderech, the Yayin Zu and Svina Ze discussion. All right, everybody, I'm sorry for going overtime, but Yesher Koach for sticking it out.
Thank you.
All right, everyone. Have a very good Shabbos.